You are listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network. Fans of podcast horror and Halloween, Friday, October 25th in Austin, Texas at the Nomad Bar at 1213 Corona Drive, we have got an event for you. Attack of the Pod People is an unprecedented party to celebrate the season featuring members of OneOfUs.net, Double Toasted, The Night Owl, Horror Queers, Junk Food Cinema, Castle of Horror, Rage Select, Women in Caskets, and the Threequel Club, all performing onstage tributes to the season. All that, and you can get up and sing with Karaoke Underground or compete in our costume contest with prizes. RSVP is required for entry, so look our event up on Facebook or Eventbrite and join us. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber-supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well. The idea of rock biopics, but did we really need another one? I mean, this is ridiculous. What, now we're just going to make a movie about AC/DC?
You know,
Tesla's after, a better band. After Judy Garland, that's where you go to next, you know? Yeah. I mean, come on.
Damn it.
I know, Chris. It's quite a shock, but we got through it.
Oh. I was going to say, Tesla and his cars must be really old by now.
I know, people are like, this guy, has the Tesla been around for that long?
Yeah, I was going to say the wheelie mount, like Granddad in Texas.
I was going to say, though, I want to see the swap where we see David Bowie as Spider-Man and he says his Tesla. This would be fine.
See, I'm actually waiting. The whole time they had that title card on the screen before the movie started, and my head, all I could think of was like the honest trailer version of this. It's like, in the past, in the future will be won by only one man. It's either Doctor Strange versus General Zod.
Yes.
Good thing he's got Spider-Man to help him. And then Zod's going to bring in Beast. And, you know, like, come on. It's like, I'm just like, every one of these dudes has played a superhero. These are
supervillain.
Yeah. And these are like four of the greatest working character actors today.
Meanwhile, Scorsese is somewhere just grumbling.
Hey, actually, Scorsese to thank for this movie. Because he's the executive producer, and we would not be having this movie if he hadn't exercised his contractual right to decline the original director's
cut. We arguably wouldn't have had this cast if it wasn't for superhero movies.
Doctor Strange,
Benedict Cumberbatch is like, look, I'll do a Doctor Strange movie, and then I can do like two of these.
And then seven more Doctor Strange
movies.
He said, I want to do a movie about a brilliant person, except I want to play it like Sherlock Holmes. Wait.
Yeah.
Already played him. Who else is there?
He pretty much is Sherlock from Sherlock.
I did not see that at all.
In some of the parts, he really is.
I did not see
that.
I think we've already gotten the crux of this podcast review.
He looks exactly like the guy who plays Sherlock. I'll give you that.
He's not as completely without humanity as Sherlock is, but he is as bitter and vain.
Thomas Edison was known as the Sherlock Holmes of Menlo Park. No, that's something.
Actually, I would watch that spinoff in a second.
What we're talking about, or doing our best to not fall into utter chaos to talk about, is The Current War. This is a film that has been sitting in the background for some time, and that's partially because, despite being premiering at TIFF in 2017, the Weinstein Company had picked up the distribution rights, and after Harvey Weinstein's sexual abuse allegations, it was shelved and then eventually sold off, and it took a while.
Yeah.
And partially because Weinstein, as was his wont, sat and cut it up and demanded it be made and edited a different way, much to the director Alfonso Gomez Rejon's chagrin.
He was not happy about it.
And the TIFF reception was not strong at all. They were not crazy about this movie. And so we're just now finally getting this after apparently a pretty sizable recut and as well filming of new scenes, from what I hear.
And a new name specifically so that it would get a brand new Rotten Tomatoes page.
Oh, I thought it was always The Current War.
No, the director's cut.
Is that why director's cut is there?
Director's cut is
right
on the time.
Because this might be the first time in my knowledge that this happened where the powers that be said, look, if even if it does great on this new cut, all of the positive reviews are going to get dumped on that Rotten Tomatoes page, and where the current page is like 30%, it's just going to drag the average down. So they actually insisted that the new title is The Current War, the director's cut, and it has its own new page on Rotten
Tomatoes.
I thought
it was
going to
be something like Lee Daniels the Butler in that sort of vein, like, no, this is my film.
Now, you don't see the director's name bandied about much here.
No, no. They just wanted to make a distinction between that version.
He's better known as a television director, for the record, who's done Glee and American Horror Story, who actually won an Emmy Award for his work on American Horror Story.
I believe he's out of Laredo, too, so he's a Texas boy.
What season?
yeah, right? It all matters.
It doesn't matter.
It wasn't Freak Show, was it? Because, come on. Anyway.
No, it wasn't Coven, was it? Fucking hell.
You're making me want to sing some
Fleetwood
Mac now. One thing I'll give you about that is at least I was like, oh, I love Stevie Nicks.
Yeah,
that's what he did.
For something called American Horror Story, that season was just not.
Yeah, remember like 2 minutes ago when Chris was like, before we all went off track.
Yeah, well.
This isn't chaos yet.
Of American Horror Story.
Hey, Chris, speaking of on track, I'm Ben.
Oh, yes, I was about to do that.
No, you were not.
Yes, I was.
Good job.
And it wasn't your turn, Ben.
I'm on track. Next to me is...
Frank.
I'm Chris.
I'm Marco, enjoying the dejected look on Chris's face.
And I'm Baz, and I can't stop laughing at the moment, to be honest with you.
So this is indeed about the War of the Currents, where Thomas Edison and George Westinghouse both had a corner on the Berry Market.
I thought it was like a sea drama.
Sorry,
the Berry Market?
Yeah. Currents.
Oh, God.
What?
Yeah. Wait,
you're just jealous.
You don't own the corn joke market, you know.
I'm jealous that one took me a minute, actually.
Thomas Edison, of course, was famous as an inventor and one of the best-known men in America. George Westinghouse, the industrialist and inventor of the air brake on trains, which saved millions of lives, was also very successful. They were both competing with electrical systems and fighting for dominance to be, like, the guy who had the contract that would electrify the world. And Edison was famously very proprietary, very selfish with his patents, very jealous and suspicious of anybody he thought was copying his work. Westinghouse, by all accounts, was much more of a mensch, kind of a rich industrialist, but the kind of guy who'd roll up his sleeves and get on the factory floor with his guys, take care of them, give them 5-hour work weeks back when people thought that was crazy.
5-day work weeks.
Five-hour work weeks. That is crazy.
Yeah,
I will say, for the record, a lot has been said that is incorrect about Thomas Edison's work practices in terms of how he treated his workers. Sure. He was actually apparently treated them incredibly well.
Yeah. But he also took a lot of credit for their ideas.
He is a pompous douche who's very much in vain about his name, but he did back it up with actual inventions that were correct. And yes, Chris is correct. He did actually support his workers and he did want to work with the smartest guys in the room, but he actually honored that they were the smartest guys.
He needed them.
Yeah. He took care of his people because he wanted everybody who worked for him to be really smart and really good at what they did. Right. He did, in fact, share patents, though. A lot of people didn't know that. I found that out just relatively recently due to a family member who was his number one laboratory assistant.
Can you expand on that?
I forget how many greats are in it. Great-great-something grandfather was Mr. Ott, his best friend, lived in the same house as him, worked with him, shared the patents for various things, including the screw on the light bulb, which he invented.
Yeah.
My great-great-whatever grandfather. My mother found a whole stack of these patents just like within the year.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Of like that they were saying didn't exist. And she's like, oh shit, here
and
they
that
are.
That was something that Edison was also very, very upset about too, because other people came up with new systems to get around his patent on that screen.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the way it's always been in an industry to some level. It takes sometimes just the tiniest difference and they're like, no, that's a different invention, even though it's not. But so the film doesn't take a side firmly on whether or not Westinghouse was,
to
in fact,
credit, it really doesn't,
ripping off Edison with what he was doing. But what it came down to is there were two different types of current. There's alternating current and there's direct current. And Edison was like, we're using direct current because I honestly believe it's a lot safer. The downside is direct current has much more limited reach. It sort of peters out after a very short space, so you have to build more plants. Whereas alternating current can go for huge distances, but it's so strong that it is, in fact, possibly dangerous
And in fact, has caused like explosions and things like that when things weren't weren't regulated. Mm-hmm. Eventually, that became where it was a non-issue, of course.
And over 100 years before the "why not both" meme became popular, America adopted that attitude, and to this day, we use AC. We also use DC.
Yeah,
it works depending
on Marvel.
Marvel, you know.
Yeah. Well, I was on
damn good Australian band too. While you're at it,
I was gonna. I will say though, they do paint a picture of Edison where he does start believing that AC is more dangerous, but then progressively gets more, he's too full of himself to admit that he was wrong and just has to keep proving it is technically able to be more dangerous, but I can't admit that it can be safe. Yeah, there's no way I can agree with that.
I gotta ask you, Edison historians, like how accurate is the level of ego that's portrayed here in the film? Because I wonder like how like close to reality.
I mean, one,
he was a pretty.
If it was made to like a movie ego.
There are a lot of different stories based on who they've talked to in the past, but it seems very clear that it was like, for instance, the movie keeps pointing out his name had to be on absolutely everything.
Right. Yeah.
He wanted to be remembered, and that much is certainly true, that he did have an ego about it, but to all reports he was genuinely a very convivial, nice guy that people really enjoyed working with, and in fact, he had a level, because the amount of inventions he'd already made up before this, was a major like American celebrity.
Right, people there's a reason why he's that popular, is because one, he does have that much that he's given to the world. Like, a lot of it, as you see in this movie, is he does want to leave a mark on the world more than he wants to make a profit. But
and he's also very altruistic.
Right, that's what I was
going to
say, but he is an utter showman. As much as he wants his name out there, he backs it up with, he knows how to present things. When he's talking to the media in this movie, that kind of is what he was like. Like, you can still, like, there's recordings from his phonograph that is a big part of this movie as well, that are still out there. And, like, I heard something, because I was a big fan of him as a young kid, before, you know, they tell young kids, like, oh, also he was very much self-centered and arrogant. But, listen to some of those, it's like, you do love your product. You speak to it so passionately, and he is that, like, electric
and
of a personality.
The movie makes a point
about, like, defending it.
The movie makes a point of making clear as well that, like, he was a man of ethics, and part of the struggle in this movie, Benedict Cumberbatch playing Edison, and then Michael Shannon, woohoo, as George Westinghouse.
I love seeing Michael Shannon get a leading role in the movie. I love it every time. So.
Yeah. Me too.
This is kind of that confrontation inside of Edison, who I would say definitely is the major character in the film, of him confronting his ego versus his sense of what's right and wrong. And this is repeatedly an issue throughout the film for him, as he's trying to confront what's more important to him, winning this war or doing the right thing.
It's such a huge ego contest, and it really is. I don't know. I mean, it's like the original shade being thrown, and, you know, just lasting for a better part of a decade.
Well, I will say one of my favorite things in this movie is that it does highlight that he very much stays on his moral track, and then he wavers a bit, but that's mostly after the death of his wife.
Yeah.
Because his wife was kind of the thing that really humanized him, especially.
But she grounded him in reality.
Yes, maybe the most, English-sounding name I've heard in quite a while.
Except for Benedict Middleton.
I'm sorry. Together, it's the basic.
Poppins and Tuppence are back, yes.
Yeah, exactly. It is the most English-sounding name next to Benedict Cumberbatch.
The two of them together, they just you put them in the same room, and they shit out the queen. It's just like
immediately. I have none of this.
Is she still around?
I will say, but yeah, so when she dies, he loses.
Still
like
lingering about.
His kids are still there that he loves, but definitely you see that affects his moral compass on that a little bit, where he's like, he decides he's going to focus on work to kind of get over this grief, and that's kind of where he focuses on winning. And I do like that they highlight that dynamic. It's subtle because they don't call it out directly, but it's very nice that it does, again, keep the character feel very more balanced in this movie, as opposed to just a guy worried about ego. It's, no, he had something that basically made him have to focus on ego, because otherwise he'd probably break down.
So over ego, I see it was more drive than anything else that was his defining factor, or at least according to this film.
Sure. So a lot of the side characters we haven't talked about, Tesla plays a character in here played by Nicholas Holt, who, the one thing I'll say right off the bat is, like, everybody on the whole does a good job with their accents, because there's a lot of non-Americans playing Americans, but Holt is so like a babe adrift trying to hold on to the Serbian accent.
You think so?
I thought it was outrageously bad.
I thought it was okay. I thought it was passable at best, but it's definitely not. It's definitely not a strong Serbian accent.
He kept dropping out of it mid-sentence completely.
Oh, I was going to say, as most of the Cumberbatch, who is not just nailing like an American accent, but that kind of that accent that Edison did have.
I suppose so. I didn't notice anything with anybody else, just him. But he plays Tesla, who comes in a little bit later into the film.
Yeah.
Who, like, I kind of thought reading about this was going to be the war between Edison and Tesla.
I kind of was hoping for that.
But it's not. It's Westinghouse and Edison, and Tesla is very much a supporting character.
Yeah,
yes. He's the most supporting of supporting characters.
Yeah. I think Westinghouse, Westinghouse versus Tesla would have made a better film.
Catherine Watterson plays Michael Shannon's wife. Tom Holland plays Edison's assistant and very close friend Samuel Insull, who later on became a very much powerhouse in business and part of this industry as well.
Why did they leave him out of the postscript of this film?
He was very young at this point.
Mm-hmm. So I was going to say,
movie said so, right? Yeah.
But the,
I missed
the,
that. Yeah.
This movie makes a lot of, like they say, choices in the way that it's made, and that I think are going to make some people more happy, because this is definitely a film that's all about like velocity and trying to make things happen very quick.
To me,
it was it felt like a really extended trailer for a miniseries.
Yeah, it was
more than a movie. It was just. Cut, this happened, and then 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 this happened.
It was like literally a movie full of montages. It's so surprising when two people are actually just talking for more than like 30 seconds.
But I will say, none of that stuff felt like it was just happening in the edit room, either. It felt like a very conscious choice.
Yeah,
design.
It did.
The score, which I was actually deeply impressed with.
It's a very
with,
good score.
Dustin O'Halloran and someone named Hashuka?
Yeah, it's a very synth-heavy score, which is what I liked about this, because there's a very easy way to make a movie like this as a very dull, staid, stodgy masterpiece theater type of history
piece.
Nothing
wrong with that.
And I think nothing inherently wrong with that, but we tend to think of these guys as...
Baz is over here. That's the British way, sir.
Indeed. Bring on that piano.
We tend to think of these things as being very slow.
What are these electronic beats?
But they're trying to jazz it up with with these quick cuts.
I'm sorry, Marco.
Marco's like,
sorry, Marco.
I had a point.
Yes,
no,
please.
No, I'm trying to get it out because we have all cut each other off, and I'm trying to be good.
Sorry.
So, but what I like about it is that they made a conscious decision to show us the excitement of what was happening in the country at the time. This isn't some bland history lesson. This was actually the future of the country was kind of writing the future of the world. Is riding on these two men's egos and their ability to pull off what they say they can do, and to present it in a way that actually has some electricity, if you will, down to the score. That to me was more interesting than seeing a bunch of guys going, and then we went to the parlor.
See, I didn't think it have to be. I don't. You're talking about like that was the only other option.
I think there's a middle ground there.
The case. Right. I think there are many ways to do it that isn't the choice they made to do it this way. And I'm not saying this is per se the wrong choice. I just found it very distracting.
I found
it took away from the feeling like I was watching anything that was real.
Yeah.
It was just
for lack of a better term, they lost faith or didn't have faith in the material that they felt they needed to jazz it up with, quick cuts and edits. I mean, this is like an editor's wet dream, this movie.
But I said, I didn't get the feeling it was all in the editing room. It felt like intentional choice when you combine it with the and I kept thinking of, Koyaanisqatsi, Philip Glass, and it doesn't sound like the tones he uses, but the way it has this sort of real steady engine chug along, repetitiveness,
and electronic.
Electronically, really reminded me of Philip Glass in the score, and that was one of those parts where I was like, this felt like they knew from the beginning this is exactly what they wanted.
It was,
and I don't think it really completely works, but I think it will work for a lot of audiences who otherwise were expecting something.
It does help the energy keep moving.
The drier film you're describing.
That ends up being meaning, Chris. Because
how many of those
are
you going to put in this
video? The actual energy itself was palpable.
Yeah,
that's what drove it for me. It was the kind of thing that the film was just sort of going, well, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. Well, this is what I'm going to do. And it,
the one-upsmanship.
It drove the movie along. And it's interesting to hear how you said it felt as if it was, it was too quick. But for myself, I actually did feel that it was necessary.
Yeah. Okay.
Because this was how shit was going down, so to speak. Right. It was like, yeah, well, I've done this. Well, fuck you, because I'm doing this.
Yeah.
And but it there felt so, like that.
But
it
there was so
felt...
much immediacy to it, though.
Yeah,
you
there
really
was.
Get to stop and appreciate
somehow,
some of the mechanics of the plot.
I described it as like a Wikipedia page being filmed.
It was.
It makes it very base.
I would probably agree with you as that, but because this is a... We're talking about electricity, and people would probably go, I didn't expect anything from this when I came in. I was thinking, I know nothing about this. It's been released in the UK in July. I didn't go to see it. I didn't know anybody who went to see it. But actually, I would tell people to go and see this.
They were seeing Midsommar during that time. Yeah. Or In Fabric, which, by the way,
during the Midsommar.
Still dying to see, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I was
so good.
Too fast, Harvey Weinstein. And this was the argument he had with the director over and over, who, you know, he said he slowed the rhythm down. And if you look at those original reviews,
God,
they complained about the pacing of
look,
it.
Marco, I don't want to think about Weinstein's rhythm. I'm sorry.
Yeah, right. Oh, good God.
He did say...
Why did you put that down?
He did say he uses the rhythm method.
So that's three.
No, but Marco, just because he incompetently stepped in and edited it in a way that made it, like, slower doesn't mean that there was a way to do it that wouldn't have been
sure. But I think I agree with you in that it's clear that this is what the director's intent was. You may not like it, but I think that this is what he wanted to do.
I'm not going
to
go so far as say I don't like it. I'm not saying that, in fact, because I
do think... You wanted to compromise.
Because I do think this is an enjoyable watch of a film.
But it does
it moves
limit
very
your,
quickly.
This way, it limits your engagement.
It does. Absolutely. You know? That was my biggest problem. It limited my engagement. There were so many points with this collection of fantastic actors that I'm like, I'm just, you know, there are all these moments you're like, man, you could keep going with this
it's
moment.
Like speed dating.
Well, and I also want to say there's some weird transitions in this movie. There's like, after he kills the horse with the electricity, there's a bunch of film reels of showing other animals and other things. And I want to say, but what I'm saying is, if you know the history of Edison and what went on with this, you know what that's showcasing. Which is something that he basically, like, there's a lot of other things he did to showcase the dangers
of
electricity.
I want to address the elephant in the room and say, wasn't that
supposed
to be an elephant?
That's what I'm saying.
I'm pretty sure that was an elephant.
No, the elephant was the biggest one that he did at like a fair.
Money.
No, but that's the thing is that pissed me off about this movie is they put it into just those film reels in the middle for a weird intercut that basically you have to be in the know that that's what that's talking about.
Yeah.
They never address that. What's that about?
Would that not make the entire thing so impalpable?
I think you lose.
No, because I see the Edison letter opener. I go, I've seen this horror movie. I'll watch this scene. I want to see him kill J.P. Morgan. Do it. Kill J.P. Morgan. Down with capitalism.
Kill Dumbo in this movie. You would lose all sympathy.
They should have killed Charles Schwab, who's in this movie.
J.P. Morgan. But what they did though is there are a few moments of violence and death in this movie, and they are all done off screen. Which I do like that. I think it's a choice. You don't have to revel in the horror of what happens when a body gets electrocuted.
Well, yeah, because that's one of the things is like one of the most horrific things during this that Edison breaking his moral code is basically he wanted to prove that Westinghouse was dangerous. And so he kind of surreptitiously, like the guys who invented the electric chair were like, we're going to use the Westinghouse current. And he's like, but we don't know, even have the faintest clue how to start. And he's not going to help us. And he's like, I'll help you, but you can't tell anybody I helped you.
Don't you know
and
this conflict then? I think that's what's really...
It's one of the more fascinating conflicts in the film, for
sure. I think the moment with the electric chair happening, my God, that's such a beautiful... That moment is just so cinematic.
Yeah.
Which I will say, it also... I want to say also the electric chair brings up probably the best scene of furniture shopping I've seen in a movie to date.
Yeah, yeah. That is truly stunning.
Yeah. One thing that this movie does so well, and kudos to Chung-Hoon-Chung, who's the cinematographer, and I think he's done some other stuff I'm familiar with, but right now I'm blanking. I know
Me and Earl and the Dying Girl?
Maybe. I'm
and
thinking
It?
Yeah,
and what?
He was...
It.
He did,
oh, there you
he
go.
Did
I heard
Earl
of that.
And the Dying Girl, which was the other film that...
he did the nasty segment Cut in Three Extremes. Yeah. Holy shit.
But this movie looks beautiful.
Did American Horror Story?
Something...
He did Stoker for Park Chan-wook.
I love Stoker. Oh, my gosh.
The cinematography in this is beautiful, and it does something that a lot of period films don't really pull off. And that is so important to the success of this film, which is it reminds you what the world was like before electricity. Mm-hmm. We tend to take it for granted. Even in period films, we see things are beautifully lit. But every scene, there's a wonderful irony of this demonstration of electrical power, but people have to use lanterns to get to it or walk through offices that are candlelit or powered through gas. There's this perumbral, like, just shadow over everything in the movie until the lights come on. And ultimately, the movie heads towards a final showdown between Westinghouse and Edison to get the bid. They ended up both doing some work on it. In the Chicago World's Fair.
The greatest world fair there ever was.
Right. Yeah. Which, as I was telling Chris, this is probably the closest we've gotten yet to seeing The Devil in the White City.
Yeah, I was saying, I'm watching this at Chicago's World's Fair, and I've read that book twice now, and I can't wait for them to hopefully finally make the movie, and all I can think is, and there should be an on-text screen at the end, and there was another genius at the Chicago World's Fair, a murder genius.
Yeah, I think you see this hotel.
That would have been too much for people.
Oh, do you? Did you see that?
There was like a hotel in the foreground that looked a lot like
maybe that was a little like nod.
I think it was a nod, but I'm like, man, I just want to see that movie so bad.
So bad.
Because, and I'm not, Eric Larson is the author. It's worth checking out.
Anything by him is worth reading, by the way.
But Edison and Tesla and Westinghouse all feature in that book, too. And they're only maybe a third of that book. So this almost feels like they took a few chapters out of that book and put it into this movie. But that contrast between a world that, you know, has this different rhythm, has this different shades, different lighting, and the contrast between the new, exciting, fast-moving, energized world that these guys were trying to bring to life is just beautifully handled in the visuals. And I really appreciated that. Down to every strange Dutch angle or odd, extremely uncomfortable wide-angle close-up.
Well, we were talking to Richard Whitaker later, and he was right. There's a scene in an elevator with Edison kind of trapped in the elevator with somebody who there clearly wants to talk to him because, like I said, Edison was a superstar celebrity and can tell that Edison is in a bad fucking mood and also doesn't belong in any space this small.
Right.
It's such a brilliant shot.
It's
and
a
this
great
film
shot.
Is filled with brilliant shots and amazing ideas that, to me, just constantly feel like, why did you stop this here?
Yeah. No, absolutely. It's very frustrating because this is a very cinematic film. This is a film lover's movie, really great looking movie.
The first two shots of this movie is that, like, it starts off with a very, you know, whited out shot that goes into something, and then the next scene is a gorgeous one where it goes from, as Marco said, starts very dark about how the world was basically very dark back then before, and then shows one the power of electricity and then how much of a showman he is. And it's such a gorgeous shot
it
is him proving why he got the nickname the Wizard of Menlo Park. It's like, nobody could imagine anything like this back then. And even cinematographically, it was actually
because Hagrid showed up and goes, "You're a wizard, Thomas."
I thought him on a motorcycle flying in the sky was odd for the moment, but it worked. Yeah.
No, you know what I was waiting for when that train stopped? Was everybody in that carriage to suddenly go into flames because of all the naked flames that were around?
Oh, no,
That train stopped. Everybody was another beautiful callback.
I was waiting for Poirot to show up, basically.
Precisely. My favorite joke
is I leaned over to Frank because me and Frank were next to each other, and they just go, "These are all the guys coming here to make the mechanical spider."
Yeah. I was sort of at a point for the whole thing, everybody to get shut down because Mr. Norrell shows up. You know what? We got this thing called magic. We can just forget about all this electricity. Oh, anyway, let's get a final thoughts. Ben, get us started.
Now you can't talk. You're running out of time.
Now you're quiet.
I am a big fan of Thomas Edison. As I said, I read the biographies of him. You read as a kid.
I'm sorry.
I read the biographies you read as a kid before they tell you that, oh, by the way, he was also very much full of himself, and some people will call him an asshole, which he was a lot in this movie, but they have the good reasons for it, where it's like, no, he thinks he's trying to help people. He thinks he's doing the right thing. He does step on that a lot, and at points make the wrong mistake. But I think that's a really great interpretation of who he is, and I think that Cumberbatch does a great job here. I also want to say, Shannon does a fantastic job in this movie. Mm-hmm. It's definitely not his strongest performance, but I think getting to see him play one of really normal, grounded person is something that he doesn't pick often.
And it's rare.
And it's great to see it, actually, here.
I will say they kind of do him a bit of a disservice where there's like this story that they keep reflecting on for his character that they drag out for the whole movie where it's like, yeah, we kind of all see where this is going. We don't really need to drag this the whole movie. They try to put it at a very climactic point and it does have an impact, but it kind of just felt unnecessary to drag the whole thing. There's so many characters in this movie that you feel like you want more time with. They keep giving everybody a damn title card as they go by them, which would work if it was a mini series where you see that character more frequently, but then it just kind of feels like they're wasted. I mean,
or like Ocean's 11.
Well, it was like a 70s TV show. That's what I thought when we were, we were discussing it. You know, still frame, name.
Exactly. There's some odd transition points, as I mentioned, but overall, it's a really beautiful movie. Well acted, you know. I definitely think what's his name? Holland could be up there for
Holland.
Tom Holland. God, you know what? There's so many names in this movie. I think Tom Holland could be up there for a nomination for best supporting actor. I don't think he'll win it. I think he's far from winning it. There's still plenty of other movies coming out this year, but he brings a lot to that. I don't think anybody else in this movie is up to like a degree that I think you could be nominated for something, which is not saying they're bad, but there's just...
They're just not given time to breathe.
Exactly. This movie doesn't get time to live.
We'll have to wait for the director's cut of the director's cut.
Yes. Exactly.
It's an enjoyable movie. If you have any interest in this history at all or any of these actors, definitely go out and see it. But if you're just like, what's this movie about the current war? I guess I like Cumberbatch. Maybe pass on this movie. I give it 8 out of 10 light bulbs on a board.
What about you, Margot?
I think I like this a little bit more than you did, but I'm basically with Ben on this.
Yeah, everything he said, and I'm like,
you know,
an 8?
I'm like, yeah. I mean, I was waiting for Ben to rate it lower.
Agreeing with
8 is a super high number rating.
Because it's not actually bad. I thought about going to 7, and I was like, it's not that bad.
No, but 7's not a bad review.
I know, but... Marco, you were saying.
I don't think he understands how this whole number system works.
Wait, I'm supposed to count? When?
I fully went into this expecting to be underwhelmed based on the reputation of this movie. I thought it was an interesting case where the story behind the movie might be more interesting than the movie itself. But I was actually pleasantly surprised. I had a really good time with this. I think it's beautiful. It is fast-paced, and that fast pace does come at a cost, and that's unfortunate. However, it's so beautiful to look at. The performances are all uniformly fine, and I just love the recreation of this world that we don't get to see very often, a world where the darkness rules, and light is something that we take for granted. I mean,
is
even
this a
now,
Star Wars crawl? What's going
yeah,
on?
Yeah, that's right.
Didn't
Thomas Edison fights for
episode
the power.
4, the current war.
Stop giving me better versions of this movie.
But yeah,
it is a dark time for America.
Literally a dark time for America.
It is literally dark time. The forces of Thomas Edison. Now wait a minute. I'm not going to.
The evils of J.P. Morgan are creeping in.
But this has a lot of themes and a lot of ideas about the future, about invention, about who gets to claim the future, who leaves a legacy, or who simply is remembered just because they were more famous. Even though I would have liked it to have slowed down a bit at times, I'm very grateful that the circumstances allowed a director a rare opportunity to get a do-over and make the movie that he wanted, whether it's the movie we wanted. At least it's a case where I'm like, you know, the artists win here. And we don't get that enough. This movie could have easily been dumped into the foreign market as had been originally planned, just to try to make as much money back as they could.
And Baz was saying you thought it had already come out in England.
Well, I think
the
idea
was... Yeah. And we were, Marco and I were discussing the fact that we didn't know which version the UK had ended up with. So is this a delayed release so that this could be all sorted out and everything else? But I don't know.
I think the plan was to send it into the non-English speaking markets, perhaps. But, you know, no, really. I mean, they were going to dump it in Asia. Figure, hey, people will go see Benedict Cumberbatch in anything. Maybe we'll make some money. But fortunately, you know, cooler heads prevailed. They managed to raise some more money, got the actors back, made, you know, shot some more scenes, and yet came up with a version that is shorter than the original cut that premiered at TIFF, which I wish I could see because I can't make a comparison. I don't know if it's better or worse than that version, but I know this version I enjoyed very much. I give this 8 out of 10 screw-based light bulbs.
Baz?
Oh, okay. Well, going into this, I must admit I was desperately uninterested. But because I was here,
you're like, thanks, Chris. Thanks for
Chris
my
for dragging me
but because
to this.
I had no other plans. No,
I got to see a movie with a bunch of English people pretending to be Americans. Damn it! Myself, every time.
Oh my god, here we go again. But as with the dragon Bruce Lee story, Jason Lee and that whole thing was like kind of comic book, and it was all kind of you know, self-referential, tiny little pieces of things. If you were the slightest bit interested in Bruce Lee, you would then start to go backwards and go, okay, my starting point was pretty crappy, but now I'm finding out about the guy. Now, this is how I felt about this. This was very sexy. It was very nicely put together. It was duh. And I felt like I need to start going back and looking at what the real shit was about. Because this gave me an interest. So, on that note, I will give it 8 out of 10 incandescent filaments.
There you go. Uh-huh. Frank? Come on, man. Help me out here. I know you're on my side.
I am on your side. I'm also on Marco's side because I echo a lot of what he said.
Well, you can't shit on both of our idiots. You got to pick one of us, Frank.
I'm not going to shit on anybody.
I'm
going
to sit over here smiling.
Come
it's okay.
To the
I'm not. I think that this...
Reach out with your feelings, Frank. Well, you know it to be true.
The harshest critique I've got is the fact that, you know, this isn't a movie. It's just like a series of montages at the end of the day. Really. I mean, it's just, you know...
Gotta have a montage.
Montage! This many of them?
No, I know. I'm just...
I mean, like, almost
montage,
like 2 hours
the
of them. But I do think, hey...
I would watch the Michael Shannon montage movie.
Yeah, I would.
But he wasn't
too.
Built in a shelter.
I want the montage. The
no, I agree with Marco in the sense that, you know, even though I don't like the montage aspect that this movie really employs and beats like a dead horse. Oh my god, I did not mean that. I did not mean to do that.
look, he killed the horse, but he's humane. He didn't beat it. God, Frank.
I did not mean
it. What kind of monster is he?
It was a bad horse. It was a bad horse, Frank.
That horse was asking for it.
That horse committed murder.
Spider-Man told me that horse was going to die anyway. It's okay.
That horse admitted to murdering its wife.
It was derelict.
Listen, I think the pacing of this film is so whiplash. It is really just...
More horse puns, really?
Oh, my God.
It's true.
You made it one, man.
I hate you for it, but you're not wrong.
I think, yeah, this movie does not know when to catch its breath. I think the editor and the director just maybe didn't have enough faith in, like, the emotional pull of this film that would be enough for audiences to be captivated by. I personally think that they're wrong. That's why we're treated to this ultra fast paced film that never knows when to slow down, and when it does, it's like, oh wow, okay, we're gonna spend a whole minute and a half with these two people on screen talking to each other, and how grateful we are for that.
If
yeah,
that.
And those are some of the best scenes, really. Yeah, the agreed. Scenes with the committee.
Yep.
The scene with Tom Holland and Benedict Cumberbatch when he's saying, "You go take that offer."
And
sort of.
Finally, in the World's Fair, between probably the longest scene in the whole film that isn't gone crazy is Benedict Cumberbatch, George Westinghouse together.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
Moment, yeah,
finally,
the
to get them oh in, God, so to get them too. In the yeah. in the same shot. Finally, that's how you know you're coming to the end of the movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree with Marco said. This is what the director wanted to make. You know. God bless it. God bless him. That, you know, and the fact that we can actually have his vision on the screen after the tumultuous road it took to get there. Unfortunately, I would have liked a much better vision, to be honest. But you know, this is a great segue. I was telling Ben, this is a great segue into award season. This is the kind of late October, mid to late October release, not the Christmas Day limited release that you would expect. There are some great performances here. I really think it's funny. I was dividing the movie up. I think I would have much rather have seen a George Westinghouse Tesla movie, or a
or Edison Tesla,
or an Edison. What's the
or just a Tesla movie? Period.
Well, that
yeah,
too.
We,
but
I'm
I
still
think,
waiting on that one.
Yeah.
Well, we all are. But I think an Edison
or Wilhelm Reich,
Holland movie. Because sorry. I think those two dynamics, separate dynamics, work really well together, and they're really interesting. you know, I think this is one of Cumberbatch's best performances, to be honest with you, as someone who does not watch Sherlock. I think he does really great. He's made my short list, maybe.
Wow.
Or my long list.
Okay.
Yeah, has Tom Holland, because I think Ben's right. This is a solid supporting actor performance, and he does, you know, surprise. That scene with him in the committee was great. Shannon, unfortunately, disappears because he's playing too normal, I feel. There's nothing really...
Yeah. I think he's fine, but I think Westinghouse is almost played too saintly in this movie. I don't think he has any real conflict that he ever gets.
No, you're right about that.
Oh, wait, I just got a call from Johnny Neal. He says, Ben, you got your turn!
Hi, Johnny. Johnny doesn't use the phone, he uses the telegraph.
True.
So, this is solid. It's solid. It's fast as fuck, but hey, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to give this 7.5 out of 10 dead horses.
Look,
went there again.
I hate to be that guy to use this term.
But you will be.
It's fine.
Here we go.
It's fine.
There we go.
You know, I'm one of those guys going to describe people like, they're going to ask me, what'd you think of the current war? I'll be like, it's fine. Like, that doesn't sound excited. I'm like, I'm not excited. It's fine. You might really like it. I found it kind of forgettable, ultimately. It's got a lot of cool ideas that are so scattered and so, like, cut into tiny little pieces that nothing sticks to your ribs. Like, the whole time, I'm like, I want to feel something during this movie, anything, and I just felt nothing. It was a giant montage trailer for a miniseries. It's gorgeous at parts, but then it cuts off just as it's getting interesting. There's points where you feel like you're about to see some great acting, and because these are obviously all really good actors, but nobody ever really gets a chance to breathe life into these parts. There's certainly enough going on in the story here where more than enough opportunities to trust these actors and the basis of what's going on to let a scene just be a scene. But instead it is. It's just kind of a giant montage film. And that's fine. That's what the director wanted. It doesn't appeal to me specifically the way it's done. I was kind of disappointed because it did feel like a wasted opportunity to make a much better film. But it's very clear this is the film the director wanted. He does everything he can to sell the film as it is, including, like I said, the score, which I think is quite remarkable and really matches what the film is trying to do. The cinematography is terrific. But ultimately, I was like, I'm glad I watched it. It's interesting. There's some stuff I would be curious to know how dead on factually some stuff is, because there were several moments I'm like, I mean, I have not intensively read about this period, but a little. And there was stuff I was like, I feel like that's not how that happened.
Sure.
But I don't, I honestly don't, I'm not educated enough on it right now to say. But I feel like this is a movie you for sure have to give a chance yourself. You're not going to be bored watching it. And I know a lot of people were like, this doesn't seem like my kind of movie. It's probably going to be really dry Oscar bait. It's not Oscar bait, weirdly. It's not. It's a populist film. And I was kind of surprised that that's what it was. And I admit, maybe part of it is that I was expecting something that was going to be, this is going to be the kind of movie I'm going to be considering in an Oscar sense. And nothing about this movie I'm considering in an Oscar sense.
Wow.
But I really enjoyed watching it nonetheless.
Chris really wants that Weinstein cut.
I do not.
I would say the score, maybe.
I'm going to end up giving this 7 dead elephants we didn't get to see out of 10. Aww.
That would have actually bumped me up to an 8.5.
I mean, we even got a Civil War scene that's drawn out for every ounce of its life.
I was going to say, I'm just waiting for the Mr. Ferris's movie as well about the wheel.
About the
Ferris
wheel?
There's a Ferris wheel. That was the first thing.
Yeah.
You know, it was the first
one. Was there a lot of drama about Ferris?
Well, I was going to say.
That big poster save Ferris that showed up.
Yeah. No. Wasn't that the biggest Ferris wheel of all time at
it
the time?
It was indeed.
That
was the
first. I mean,
it was the first.
The thing
is,
the Chicago World's, this is a good example of what my problem is with this movie, is because it almost tries to do too much.
Yeah.
Like, the Chicago World's Fair itself is an entire fucking 3-hour film.
That's a miniseries right there.
There's so much fascinating things at that Chicago World's Fair that were going on. There's a mass murderer who built a murder, a tie.
Look, we get it. You want the murder house movies.
No, no, no. And the design of it and all these first time anybody had ever seen
all these different zones. It was like an Epcot from the 1800s.
You know what's the biggest thing this movie didn't touch enough on? That Edison was one of the first people to pun name his children as a celebrity. Dot and Dash, go
That's
fuck
true.
Yourself, Thomas You're Edison.
Right. Was that You're real? Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, fuck.
He named his kids Dot and Dash.
My wife worked in Morse code. I'm going to name my children Dot and Dash. Fuck you.
He really knows how to push your buttons, doesn't he?